And right now, I'm very happy to welcome to our program independent journalist Arvind Dilawar. And we're happy that you could join us this evening, Arvind, to talk about your recent Counterpunch article titled "How Israeli Propagandists Reach Journalists." So thanks for being here.
Thanks so much for having me.
So as we begin, we'll be talking about some of the specific issues you bring up in your article. I first wanted to get your overview about the flow of information Americans receive concerning the ongoing Israeli military's air and ground assault in Gaza that has thus far killed more than 32,000 Palestinians, including more than 13,700 children. And of course, the war followed the October 7th Hamas terrorist attack that killed 1,200 Israelis and kidnapped some 240 hostages taken back to Gaza. Massive demonstrations in Israel yesterday and today demanding Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's resignation and new elections. There's a lot of unhappiness with what's going on in Israel. But yeah, tell us about the flow of information. What are Americans receiving and not receiving in terms of important information about the war that Israel is conducting right now in Gaza?
Well, it's actually sort of remarkable because you have two almost distinct channels that, generally speaking, are almost defined by age. Older Americans are more likely than younger ones to turn to traditional forms of media, such as broadcast journalism on television. And there you can sort of see almost like the State Department's line on what's going on in Gaza. That is, the Israeli military is trying to minimize civilian casualties and return the hostages while taking all precaution and yet still, you know, successfully fighting Hamas. That is remarkably different from what you see on social media, where it's more of a direct stream of information directly from the ground on Gaza, particularly on TikTok, Instagram, and Twitter, which is obviously now known as X. There, you're really getting a picture of what it's like for Palestinians on the ground to live through this, and it's almost the exact opposite of what broadcast journalism is showing. That is, you know, indiscriminate violence from the Israeli military, very little concern for civilians, if not the intentional targeting of civilians. And these two distinct channels, that is, broadcast journalism versus social media, are having a profound effect on, you know, how Americans perceive the conflict, whether this is justified anti-terrorism operation or this is a genocide that we're watching unfold. Part of this obviously has to do with the United States' position in the world and in particular on this conflict, but it also has to do with the sort of relative freedom of information to spread on social media. I think it's also particularly worth keeping in mind that journalists themselves are not free to report from Israel, that is Israel proper and the occupied Palestinian territories. They need to register with the Israeli government. They need to have press credentials, which also entails them being subject to Israeli military censorship. And this is true of Israeli publications as much as it's true of CNN. Recently, there was some reporting about how CNN runs all of its coverage of the war through its Jerusalem bureau, which is subject to Israeli military censorship. This also becomes more extreme when you get to Gaza, where the international press in general is not let in. One of the only publications there since October 7th to this day has been Al Jazeera, who are relying on Palestinian journalists to essentially tell the story of their own genocide. So there's a lot of reasons why we have sort of very disparate views that Americans are being spoon-fed in, I would say, the broadcast journalism versus, you know, getting raw through social media.
Right. And I just heard today that Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has announced that he will be banning Al Jazeera from Israel at this point or a later point to be determined. But yeah, they have long shot at, killed journalists in the West Bank and other locales. Yeah, it's a bad situation for journalists. Dozens of journalists have been killed in Gaza. That
absolutely
future program we're going to be talking about.
Yeah, just to, you know, really drive home that point. This is the most violent conflict for journalists stretching back to World War II. More journalists have been killed in the last 6 months of the Israeli military campaign in Gaza than were killed in the entirety of World War II.
Wow. Yeah, that's stunning. And going to be focusing on that situation with some groups that protect journalists or work to protect journalists around the world. But Arvind, I did want to also mention that in U.S. media generally, there's a lot of featuring of Israeli spokespeople, the military or government spokespeople, and very little pushback, even despite occasions when there is evidence contradicting what the Israeli spokespeople are telling an American audience. They take it, U.S. Anchors and editors generally take what the Israeli spokespeople say at face value with no challenge at all.
Yeah, absolutely. I think partly this is due to Israeli spokespeople really being smart enough to not only offer their sort of routine press releases. The Israeli military every day offers a press release in Hebrew, but they also offer it in English. That's really the only other language they offer it in. And that's because they need and they understand that they need the United States government and its people to sort of remain on the Israeli side to keep funding their military occupation and the ongoing genocide more particularly. This, you can compare this to the sort of, standard setup of any news show with you have your anchor in the middle and you have two talking heads. On one side, it's usually a Democrat. On the other side, it's a Republican. And the anchor sort of sits back and lets them get at it. But when you look at coverage of the ongoing genocide in Gaza, there's actually no other side. There's really just the anchor who allows the Israeli presenter, usually someone from the government or military, to sort of present their justification for the ongoing military operations. And there's really nobody across the aisle from them to sort of debate them at all. This is partially because, Palestine has been occupied since 1948, and there is no recognized government, essentially, to provide that counterpoint. Most Palestinian media is in Arabic. I think part of the reason that, younger Americans through social media are getting better coverage of the conflict is because those younger Palestinians are more likely to be able to present in English. Otherwise, there are a lot of very dedicated translators putting in the time and effort, essentially volunteering to help translate their coverage from Palestine into English so Americans and others around the world can appreciate it. But really, there is no pushback at all because there's no one on the other side of the aisle. You would imagine that American anchors would know better, but there's also, especially since October 7th, been a real lack of accountability. I used to watch PBS NewsHour regularly every day, and I think since October 7th, I've had to just completely avoid it because, In certain occasions, they would have on an Israeli guest that openly advocated for the absolute destruction of Gaza and received no pushback at all from an anchor. Hmm. And if that's what PBS, which is considered like a very moderate, calm platform as compared to Fox News or any of the other larger broadcast outfits, if PBS is going to let something like that fly, I can only imagine what's going on everywhere else. I imagine it's just really unfiltered justification and, frankly, propaganda for the ongoing genocide.
We're speaking with Arvind Dilawar, and we're talking about his article, How Israeli Propagandists Reach Journalists. And in your article, Arvind, you talk about a pitch you received as a journalist from Steinreich Communications Group regarding Avi Melamed, an Israeli military's about an Israeli military planned attack on Rafah that we've all been sort of keeping track of, and the views that the spokesperson Avi Melamed were pushing. Tell us a bit about your encounter with this operation to inject Israeli views in the mainstream media here in the U.S.?
So as I mentioned in my article, it's not remarkable for a journalist such as myself, as a freelancer or others on staff, to receive emails from publicists. We receive dozens, if not hundreds, every single day. These publicists are sometimes employed by either corporate outfits or government agencies to help disseminate the information about, you know, their latest product or service, or in the case of the government, initiatives that they would like publicized. There are also independent PR firms such as Steinreich Communications Group appears to be. I should mention, I reached out to Steinreich and Melamud for interviews and neither returned my requests. So I can only sort of infer to some degree. But the email was remarkable insofar as it was essentially genocide apologia. You know, Melamud is a former intelligence officer. What's interesting is his perspective brings nothing new to the table in terms of what is happening tactically regarding the invasion of Rafah. All the pitch said was it's impending. It's probably been already approved from a military aspect, but is just waiting for the final go-ahead from the political establishment in Israel, which is, there's nothing remarkable about that. There's nothing particularly insightful about that. That's what everyone has been reporting for weeks now. But what I found interesting was, although Melamud is presented as an independent source, he's no longer part of the Israeli intelligence body, he was still parroting essentially the Israeli line, which is that the Israeli military seeks to minimize civilian casualties and Hamas gains from the loss of life. So you have this former military officer, intelligence official, who is essentially parroting this Israeli state line, yet being presented as an independent source, as someone with their own unique insights. And this is appealing to journalists who either don't know better or maybe are squeezed for time. As I mentioned in my article, journalists are always operating under the gun. They always need to file stories on a daily, semi-daily basis, and they need to quickly gather the information to put those drafts together and to support their reporting with original interviews. So when they see someone like this who's offered up as a former Israeli intelligence official who's willing to talk, because so often current officers are unwilling to talk to the press, they might be tempted. They might be tempted to look at this as here's a person who is not a representative of Hamas, obviously, not a current representative of the Israeli government. They are what appears to be a neutral third party who can weigh in on this issue with their own independent perspective. Yet when you look at what they're saying, it's really just the same thing as the Israeli state. And unfortunately, you know, half a dozen large publications like The Guardian really did turn to this person and give them a platform to spew essentially what is, again, genocide apologia.
Hmm. You know, as this war in Gaza has been going on for almost 6 months now, and U.S. public opinion strongly favors a ceasefire and opposes Israel's mass killing of civilians there, has that at all helped or influenced corporate media editors to be more even-handed and inclusive of views critical of Israel and U.S. policy in Gaza? And I know you probably don't have a scientific study on that, but what's your impression?
You know, the impression I get from reading the news every single day and following this issue as closely as possible is not that editors have become more even-handed. They've just become quieter. If you look at the coverage right after October 7th, what you saw was a lot of really bold front page stories about the victims of the attack on October 7th. From there was a shift then strategically, both on the ground in Israel as well as in the State Department, which you could also see reverberate through the press, of how careful the claim was. The Israeli military was being in its military operations. This was something the the State Department mentioned this was something that you could see in multiple stories about how targeted strikes were happening, civilian casualties were minimal, and the Israelis were really operating at, you know, the height of military professionalism. And then once the casualties started mounting, more and more people, mostly women and children, were being killed in Gaza, you saw the story start to change. It didn't admit that this is what was happening, but you saw a very concentrated effort to delegitimize any source of information about the numbers being killed. So you saw, very famously, Biden publicly questioning the numbers to the point that the Gaza Ministry of Health had to literally publish the names and ages of everyone who has been killed. Pages and pages of just names. And you also saw repeatedly a phrase pop up that was not used at all prior to that, the Hamas-run health ministry, which is sort of absurd. Like, it's not the Democrat-run State Department when you're talking about Biden's State Department. It's not the Likud-run Israeli defense ministry when you're speaking of Netanyahu's defense ministry. Yet they were strategically using Hamas, which is the elected government in Gaza. They were rightfully elected at the time of the last election, which I believe was in 2005, 6 or 7. But also the health ministry, multiple organizations, including the Israeli military itself, relies on the Gaza Ministry of Health to understand what is happening in Gaza, the numbers of people who live there, the number of people who are killed. The UN has said it's a reliable source of information, and yet it was being doubted. Once the sheer scale of death and destruction was undeniable, then suddenly you just saw less coverage altogether. It's sort of remarkable. If you open up the Associated Press, one of the biggest news services in this country, it's probably the source of most of the information for all of your local newspapers. If you open up the app, and I encourage anyone listening here to do this, you'll be able to see on their homepage, you have the various sections, world news, politics, sports, etc., but also a few special ones such as the war for the war in Ukraine. There's none for the current war on Gaza. That's remarkable that the Associated Press, one of the leading purveyors of news in this country, doesn't even carve out space for this issue that is affecting so many people. Mm-hmm. And this is what I mean about the editors not really choosing to be more even-handed, but really choosing silence over publishing prior to this really just propaganda for the Israeli war effort.
Well, Arvin, I'm sorry to say we're out of time. There's so much more to talk about, but I know you'll be following this story, and I'm eager to see, you know, the other topics you'll be writing about, so I'd like to stay in touch. But how can our listeners find the article we've been talking about and your other writings? You want to leave us with some web addresses there?
Absolutely. So the article that you had referenced, How Israeli Propagandists Reach Journalists, is on Counterpunch. That's counterpunch.org. And if anyone's interested in keeping up with my work in particular, I have my own website, adilawar, that's adilawar.com, where I publish all of my writings from around the internet. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, thank you for being here tonight and for your important work. We'll stay in touch. Thanks so much, Arvin.
Thanks a lot. Take care.
Bye-bye. That's independent journalist Arvin Dilawar and talking about U.S. media and the flow of information in the Gaza war.